Hello and welcome back to another episode of American Muslim Project. I'm your host, Asad Butt. American Muslim Project is a podcast where we talk about the news and information that's affecting the American Muslim community. We are now in our third season, our second episode, and we are kind of experimenting with a bunch of things. Today, again, we are going to be talking about the news headlines that are affecting the American Muslim community, but kind of also what they're just talking about. Today's episode, we're going to talk about what's happening in Palestine, election news, and a bunch of actions that CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, is taking. And we're going to talk about some new Muslim innovation and also give you a clip from a new podcast that we're listening to. But before we jump into all that, I want to introduce my guest today, who was here with us last week. It's my sister, Nadia Butt, who is what do I call you now? The DEI consultant.
I'd rather be called a leadership development consultant. But sure, you call me whatever you want to call.
Development consultant. I like that. Okay. All right. Welcome, Nadia. Welcome back.
Thank
How are you doing?
Doing good. It sounds like the people wanted me back. Is that fair?
I think you got some rave reviews, a lot better than I did. At least that's what our family is telling us.
Yeah.
Producer Ari was like, yeah, bring Nadia back and maybe let's cut you out, Asad, from the podcast. So
amazing.
Yeah, basically that's what's happening.
Yep.
Nadia, how was your week?
My week is it was great because you were
I was visiting. Yeah, you got to see your niece.
I got to see my niece and spend a lot of time with her. We did a lot of family stuff. We went to the Museum of Science in Boston, which was fantastic.
Yeah, it was good week. My daughter is 9 months old, or about to turn 10 months, I guess. Today. Yeah, today.
Yeah.
She's
officially 10 months.
Officially 10 months. And so, yeah, it's been fun taking her to meet her family on the East Coast and seeing lots of friends and family. Nadia, should we get into it?
We should. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Let's start with what everybody continues to talk about for 100 days now. Now that you know the news, I know the news. It's that of the war in Gaza, war on Gaza, however you want to say it. It has been over 100 days now. Let's pull up this tweet from Max Blumenthal. He just kind of laid out some of the stats, which I think when you look at it like this on stuff that's happening every day, it's kind of crazy. 247 Palestinians have been killed every day. That includes 48 mothers, 117 children, 3 medics, 2 teachers. All those have been killed every single day for the last 100 days. And then 10 children each day have lost 1 or 2 limbs. Just a massive amount of devastation. And, the big story, I think what a lot of American Muslims were talking about this past week, Nadia, was this big protest down in D.C. Mm-hmm. and across the world. You saw some of those videos, right?
I did, yeah. And actually, I think it would be remiss to say that the last standing hospital in southern Gaza is also destroyed. Yeah, are being attacked, and so I think that happened just recently. And so I wanted to make sure we mentioned that as well, because all of those numbers will increase in terms of medics and children.
I also think about the journalists, and it's just that it's a scale of devastation that we've never seen in this amount of time, and just crazy. But yeah, so that's what protesters were gathering in downtown D.C. Let's pull up this article. On Saturday afternoon, hundreds of thousands of people came out. I saw a number of maybe 400,000, but hundreds of thousands for sure, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and to halt U.S. aid to Israel. It was part of a global day of protests that saw similar pro-Palestinian marches in cities that included London, Rome, Paris, Dublin, Johannesburg, and even in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. It was organized here locally in the D.C. area by the American Muslim Task Force for Palestine and other groups as well. Nadia, Saturday's protest comes after, just a day after, Israel rejected allegations brought by South Africa at the International Court of Justice. Did you watch any of those hearings, Nadia?
I, well, you know, it was only streaming on Al Jazeera from what I could see. Yeah, that's right.
Did you see it? A lot of people were talking about it online, how no Western news outlet carried South Africa's presentation, but a lot of them carried Israel's presentation.
Yeah, that's typical of what we've seen in the last 100 days is really, you know, kind of sharing whether it's like the lived experiences of Israeli family, of the hostages that were taken. We're seeing very little around like the lived experiences of Palestinian folks or Gazan folks
on mainstream. So I was not on mainstream media.
Sure. Yeah. And so, yeah, I guess I'm not surprised that it was that the hearings, is that what we're calling them? The hearings, yeah. That the hearings were not broadcasted on mainstream media, like, you know, be the BBC or any of the American kind of, broadcast stations, including like NPR and PBS, like didn't really see much.
Yeah.
Around that as well. So yeah, not the prize.
For me, yeah, I saw a lot of it on social media and most of it afterwards, information on both sides. And, you know, I thought that South Africa made a strong case. And, you know, honestly, I think Israel has made a strong rebuttal as well based on their interpretation of the law. It's, you know.
Sure.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. But going back to the protest, and the other thing about it, now that it's happened on MLK weekend, MLK Day weekend. Which I thought was really, a nice touch for the organizers. We have a quote here in the article that says, from Mohammed Habi, the director of development for the American Muslims for Palestine, who was one of the lead organizers of the event. He said, and I quote, "We feel that it is important for us to come on this holiday weekend in the spirit of MLK when he said that, quote, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, that we stand up against the injustice that's going on in Gaza right now and stand up against the atrocities that are being supported and promoted by our government." Now, what did you think about the meaning of it happening over this weekend?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of conversation around the fact that it was over this holiday. I think it was might have been intentional, but I think it was great to have it because we know in America, at least, what MLK stands for and what that holiday stands for in particular. I did struggle, though. I saw a lot of MLK quotes that were pertaining to one, the same quote that we see every year, which is, "I have a dream." And then I saw a lot of quotes that were kind of not necessarily advocating for the humanitarian efforts that are being done across, you know, Gaza or Palestine. I did read a really cool article and I forwarded it to you, but I don't know if you took a moment to read it. I sent it kind of right before this, but it was a really great Washington Post article. The sermons where MLK spoke candidly on the Arab-Israeli conflict. MLK did have I had some stuff to say around the Arab-Israeli conflict when he was alive, as did Malcolm X. And I just thought that piece, that article, was really interesting, as you talked about, as they kind of laid out when he visited the Holy Land and why he didn't go back the second time around. And I would really encourage folks to read that if they really wanted to get an understanding of kind of his perspective, his take on that area,
yeah,
in the Middle East.
I think that there's no doubt that he would be calling for a ceasefire, you know, probably on day one, but yeah, certainly by
and
now.
Some might argue that.
Yeah, you think so? Yeah.
I've heard some people arguing that.
Okay,
that,
well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know MLK as well as others, but yeah, I can't imagine someone like him would be advocating for this kind of death and destruction and despair to people that are, you know, some of the most victimized, you know, in the world, at least, you know, in the last couple decades, let alone last month. But,
yeah,
you know, now that Cornel West was there, let's pull up this story and listen to some sound from him at the Global Day of Action for Gaza.
But when I talk about, and one of these days is going to happen, I may not live to see it for myself, But I know I would have done all that I could to bear witness with every bone in my body. But I want that free Palestine to be a place where we're able to bring together human beings in such a way that, yes, we would be concerned about Jewish safety and security. Nobody's calling for the annihilation of Jewish brothers and sisters, but you'll never have Jewish security. You never have Jewish safety if you don't have Palestinian security, if you don't have Palestinian safety. That's what we're talking about. We want equality. We want equality. We want equality.
So yeah, so that was Professor Cornel West, who is a renowned philosopher and theologian, standing in solidarity with Palestinians at the rally in D.C., and he made an impassioned plea for justice and dignity, drawing parallels between the struggles of Palestinians and African Americans, and calling for an end to the occupation in Gaza and a future of dignity for Palestinians. Obviously, he is still, he is running for president. But I thought it was, it was important for him, important for presidential candidate to be there and share his thoughts. What do you think about that, Nadia?
Yeah, I mean, so he's a leader. He's a person running in this race. I was reading, I think in that article that you'd sent, according to a recent New York Times, Siena College polls, 57% of Americans disapprove of how Biden is handling the conflict.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, right? Yeah.
Yep. And an even deeper divide among young voters. And I think that Cornel West kind of understands that and understands why folks are disappointed in Biden handling, this conflict and his not really listening to, or capturing sentiments of folks that are feeling disappointed. So I think that he is absolutely, trying to get some traction in the communities of both Arab, Muslim, American Muslim, Palestinian, or just folks that are really advocating for the ceasefire and so forth.
Yeah, let's pull up this story from ABC News that says that Cornel West is making a big push to court the Muslim and Arab American vote. He obviously was speaking at the event over the weekend, but amongst other things, holding fundraisers and whatnot. And, he has a history of supporting Muslim and Arab communities and condemning the war in Gaza and urging investigations into potential war crimes, all the things that I think many Muslims have called for definitely recently, but over the last, couple decades starting with the war in Iraq. Now that his entrance into the race, especially if he can sway some Arabs and Muslims, could have a huge impact, especially, in places like Michigan.
So that's a question I got for you, because I know that the U.S. Census doesn't necessarily track religion of voters. Do we know how many Muslim voters there are? And then in particular in Michigan, is that like a data source that we may have?
I don't have it. I mean, I think that the assumption is that I think from the data that I know, the last election was so close in Michigan, just whatever, tens of thousands of votes. And so,
with it's always been a swing state.
Yeah.
Right?
A place so like Dearborn, they have, Dearborn, Michigan is a hotbed for the Muslim community. Hotbed is probably the wrong word to say, but has a big Muslim population, Arab as well, in the surrounding communities. And so the idea is that, if they come out in a voting block where, 60, 70, 80% of them decide not to vote for Biden, then that's going to have, a huge impact.
Tremendous impact. Because then the alternative is a Trump term, right? Like, is that like if folks go out and vote for Cornell or someone else, that splits the vote.
Yeah, the presumption is that they're not voting then for Biden, and then Trump wins. But yeah, I mean the other option is the other people that are voting for Biden should vote for West or a third party candidate, and that person can
right.
beat Trump at the polls. But might be a little wishful thinking on our part. But Nadia, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk more about the election because there is more to cover with that. So we'll be right back. This is American Muslim Project.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome back to American Muslim Project. My guest today is Nadia Butt, leadership development consultant.
That's
amongst
right.
Amongst other things, and our news analyst this week for American Muslim Project. Nadia, I want to take a turn, I guess, back to the election. And, you know, we were talking about Cornel West, but I think the other obviously big story of the week is that Trump, kicked ass in Iowa. And probably by the time a lot of you hear this, we'll have either kicked ass or done really well in New Hampshire, though I guess that's still up in the air. But, Nadia, I think that he is going to be the presumptive nominee. Let's pull up this Al Jazeera article. And, you know, what does this mean for Muslims? At least 70% of Republican adults would reportedly be satisfied with Trump as the party's presidential nominee. They call him, a strong leader and the best qualified to serve. You know, we kind of know all this, but. Yeah, I think that this train is coming. I think that DeSantis and Nikki Haley gave it a good shot, but it's hard to beat. It's hard to beat the Trump train. Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah, and I guess how I don't know, my familiarity around the Iowa caucus is not super on par, but I'm curious, is it typically in the last few election cycles? That typically is the person that would, whoever wins that is typically the person that would be indicative of.
Not necessarily, but, I think that all the polls nationally and within various states show that Trump is, way out ahead, winning with bigger margins than, anybody in history. Just we haven't seen these kind of numbers before. And so. Yeah, I think this was the first test, and it's clear that the Republican Party wants him to be the nominee, or at least the Republican base of the Republican Party wants him to be the nominee. And so, right. Yeah, unless something major happens, which of course could happen with his
campaign
his health. or health, or
you never know, his many indictments.
Exactly right. He is going to be. He could very well become president. And so, I think this is, going back to what we're talking about with Cornel West and third party candidates, Muslims are going to have big influence in the future of this country if this continues to go the way that it's going.
How do you feel about this? Just out of curiosity, what are your thoughts about if Trump is the nominee and then does win? Another Trump term.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there's not a lot of difference between a Biden or a Trump in terms of the issues that I care most about. That has to do with, treatment of Muslims. So, there's Trump, who is overtly racist. And then you have Biden, who is essentially, just systemic racism is his thing, right? What's the difference between the two when it comes to how they treat, the Muslim community? I think you could... obviously make arguments for either one, but yeah, I don't know. Time will tell. Yeah, I know. I just don't, I think that a Biden presidency would probably be marginally better for the American Muslim community, for the global Muslim community. Trump didn't start any wars. Biden has. And so, yeah, it's,
Well, a war internationally, but a war on women's bodies might be a different topic, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
I mean, when we think about
definitions,
like,
matter, as we were discussing.
Well, yeah, when we think of right, sure. Like, so you're concerned about different issues, but like, I
for
think
sure.
Of, I do think of, and I don't know what the average American Muslim thinks, but I think of my friends, and of course, like, this war is top of mind, but there's other issues that we're still concerned with, like, you know, friends of the LGBTQIA plus community, women's rights, education. I mean, we are banning books left and right. So, like, I don't even think that the book that I contributed to in the book chapter is really allowed in states like Florida. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So, just, yes, I agree.
You know, I think that, yes, certainly on paper, in theory, you know, a Biden presidency would be better. But he's had 4 years to do a lot in those regards and hasn't done a lot. So,
right.
Or 3 years, I guess, at this point. And so, you know, the rhetoric, rhetoric is important. And obviously the rhetoric coming from Biden generally now is a lot better than the rhetoric coming from Trump. But yeah, I still think that there's not a lot of, there's not a lot of distance between the two of them, you know, when it comes to what the presidency will look like when either of them are president. But
sure.
Now, I wanted to bring up some news stories moving on to Vivek Ramaswamy, who dropped out of the race and has endorsed Trump, you know, in the past week. But, you know, he, you know, before the Iowa caucuses, now that he was actually a target of Islamophobia. So Ramaswamy, let's pull this up. This is from The Independent. And basically, Nadia, the article goes on to say that Iowa voters thought that he was Muslim due to his skin color and his religion, despite being Hindu, and how that maybe affected him by not getting votes. And so it's wild to me, right? Like, so
the inherent racism or Islamophobia
exactly,
that people
right?
have, yeah,
A, that they don't know any better, and B, that's a problem. Of, you know, it's so ridiculous to me. So
it reminds me of when Obama, right? Obama.
Well, of course. I mean, so many people still
Barack
think
Hosada,
Obama is Muslim, which is obviously false. But also, who cares?
Who cares if he was
yeah,
right?
Exactly. So Ramaswamy reportedly faced so many questions about his Hindu faith that he eventually incorporated an explainer of Hinduism into his campaign stump speech, which I thought was interesting. But you know, it's so fascinating that, like, you know, people of color or someone like him has to deal with this, you know?
Yeah, well, it's interesting to me because I think it's probably why I'm observing Namrata Randhawa, who's also AKA known as Nikki Haley, making herself appear to be more white and sharing her Christian values and beliefs so that she can gain that voter and donor support.
Yeah, I feel like she's more of a well-known entity anyway, you know, having
she
already
is,
served
yeah.
government and all that kind of stuff. But
sure,
yeah,
sure.
I mean, been playing this game seemingly to hide her background and nationality, ethnicity, or not nationality, ethnicity.
Identity.
Yeah, for sure.
Parts of her identity, but then uses her identity when she knows that she can, it will go towards her advantage, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not faulting her. She can do her, but it's very interesting to me that the name, the you know, converting to Christianity, like, you know, some of these things, and then kind of talking about immigration in a way that is really negative when this is all her kind of background. So it's interesting to me.
Yeah, for sure. And now the another news story coming out of Texas, similar in that vein, and that is Carrie Cheshire, a Texas conservative activist, has sent anti-Muslim happy, quote unquote, happy Ramadan cards to voters in the legislative district of the Texas House Speaker, Dade Phelan. Phelan, I think that's how you pronounce his name. The cards are sarcastically wish constituents a happy Ramadan, insinuating that the speaker is Muslim, despite him being Catholic. Again, not that it matters that he would be Muslim. The mailers, which are paid for by that guy named Cheshire, ridicule Phelan for his alleged pro-Muslim record based on a couple of resolutions that he passed, which recognized Eid as a holiday. And so, yeah, just kind of, again, this like using, you know, charging someone as Muslim who's A, not, and basically making it into a slur in to win political points is just ridiculous to me.
Yeah, it's these fear-based tactics, I think, right, that insinuate being Muslim is bad and don't vote for this person or look what this person is doing. And that just perpetuates the anti-Muslim sentiment and Islamophobia that so many of us have had to deal with. And so, you know, I don't, you know, where is this? This is in Texas, you said. Is this the Sugar Land area or something like that? I'm not
actually
quite sure.
I don't see this article was in the Texas Tribune.
Okay.
I forgot where exactly it is.
Well, anyways, I thought I read Sugarland, and if it is Sugarland, that's a very predominantly South Asian community in the Houston area. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was there. But yeah, that's kind of sad. You know, Happy Ramadan is no different than saying Merry Christmas, Happy Easter, Happy New Year. And so to say it in like a, you know, sarcastic way to try to get voters against someone because they they support having Eid off or having holidays for Eid is ridiculous.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
And then finally, another story that we are tracking, similar in vein, and this is out of North Chicago. Let's pull this up. And so the story goes that Ramtin Sabit, a former police officer in North Chicago, has won almost $500,000 dollar settlement in federal court regarding a religious and national origin discrimination case. And so he says that that fellow officers basically told him that he was a terrorist Muslim and that he held a gun like a Muslim. And when he brought complaints to a supervisor, both orally and in writing, they were ignored or met with consequences such as being denied promotions and training opportunities. This is all according to the Council on American Islamic Relations in Chicago. And basically they say that Sabbath faced relentless harassment and discrimination from his fellow officers based on his Islamic faith and the fact that he was from Iran or ethnically Iranian. Nadia, we see this, that you're an expert on this kind of stuff. This must happen a lot, right?
It does. Unfortunately, workplace discrimination is happening a lot and is happening right now several times, probably a week or month even in the States, particularly if you are American Muslim or even other religions, but or discriminated, you know, that religions that are predominantly discriminated against. And it is sad. There's a lot of research out there right now around the claims that are happening. We talk about this a lot on Inclusive Collective podcasts where Rob and I have, you know, break down kind of this discrimination that occurs and like the amount of money that employers, in this case, probably the city, had to, you know, settle on for these types of cases. And I do hope that in addition to a settlement, there's other forms of learning or other forms of reflection that can happen so that this doesn't continue to happen. But I'm not so sure that that is the case.
The settlement serves, the article goes on to say, serves as a significant win against workplace bullying and harassment, emphasizing that such behavior will not be tolerated. And then the person, the victim, he views it as a victory against discrimination in the workplace. Definitely, look, I'm glad that that came to a positive resolution, though it's sad that that stuff happens.
It is. I will just add, though, Asad, because this is me and I do leadership development work, that is great in terms of a victory against discrimination, but it doesn't mean that it's going to end.
Correct. Yeah. Right.
Behavioral, right? Like behavioral changes don't end in that
for
way.
Sure.
And so I just want to name that
totally.
As we talk about it.
Okay, Nadia, a lot of heavy stuff. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, let's talk some new Muslim tech innovation, and we'll share a clip from a new podcast that we are following. This is American Muslim Project. Welcome back to American Muslim Project. My guest today is Nadia Butt, who is a, what is it again, Nadia?
Leadership development consultant.
I knew it. I was just kidding.
Also, Nadia, I am your sister.
No, also my sister. Yes, also that. So Nadia, I want to pull this up. I found this, I don't even know how, on socials or whatever. We're trying to figure out if we're pronouncing the name right, but Qarib. Is a new events calendar for the Muslim community. It looks like it's still in beta, but it's basically intended to help users find local events. Wanted our listeners to know more about it. And the way that it's spelled, Qarib, and we'll have links to it in the show notes. But their goal is to empower the global Muslim community through a central hub for events, activities, and resources, enhancing faith, knowledge, and well-being. And their goal, you know, their mission is to curate events tailored to, you know, the values and interests of the Muslim community. So just something that we wanted the community to be aware of. And yeah, we'll link to it in the show notes. And finally, today, we're going to introduce a new section of our podcast where we actually highlight other podcasts that we think that you should know, done by Muslims. And so this week, we're going to highlight The Halal Gap, which is a podcast that covers everything from common everyday struggles to the relative scarcity of Muslim individuals in the creative industry. Co-hosts Sikandar Atik and Sophie Alani explore stories and opinions of Muslims from around the world, aiming to showcase the incredible bodies of work and uniquely divergent experiences of genuine, hardworking individuals who identify as Muslim. The Halal Gap returned with its most recent season just this past week with a special episode from the 2023 Mosquers Film Festival, which I attended just in October. And so this clip from that podcast is from their opening panel discussion, in which a bunch of creative individuals talked about the wealth of talent and diverse voices of Muslims from around the world and how hard it is to get stuff made in the creative world. Take a listen.
You know, I think when we talk about so much of what has been already mentioned, but when we talk about success or being able to enter into rooms that can at least pave the path towards success, so much of it is about your network, right? And so much of it is about how do you even get into that room? How do you develop that network? And as we know, in so many industries, and this is no exception, it's more about who you know than what you know. And when we're dealing with this existing underrepresented community, there's that additional barrier that exists when you don't have someone necessarily that you can reach up to and say, hey, you've gone through a similar experience as I have, you know, can you be that mentor for me? So I wanna ask, Imran, I'll go back to you first. You know, especially as someone who has navigated building, you know, professional relationships in spaces where you might be the only Muslim in the room, how has that journey been for you in terms of just the networking aspect and being able to develop a peer group within the film industry?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think there's two aspects of it, the way I see it, there's two. There's one, it's like your peer group that you meet when you're starting out, that could be, you know, other people who are from a similar background to you or not, but those like initial bonds of, oh, we're all starting out and trying to figure out how to, you know, be filmmakers together or writers or whatever it is, that is a very important. Those are important bonds because those are the bonds that like kind of last through your whole career. I made some of those bonds in film school. I made some of those bonds before going to film school with just friends making YouTube videos, and like that, those things carry through. And I think that's really important. And then the other part of it is like working in industry and developing like professional relationships with people and just doing a good job. I think it's like you could be, I guess I'll give an example. Like you, if you, let's say you've written a really great script and you're working in some sort of professional capacity at like a TV show or a studio or some kind of like something in entertainment. But like you don't, like you have this great script and you know, like you could show it to people who you work with. But I think like the part of it that's important is like you have to be doing a really good job at the thing you're doing at that place. So it's like if you're just getting coffee for people and you're like an assistant or you're like whatever, you have to do a really good job. People have to like you. Like they have to like you for like what you're providing for that organization. And like you're, you know, and that then, you know, you develop relationships, and then at some point when you feel like it's a good time, you can make that ask. You can say, "Hey, would you be willing to read something that I wrote?" You know, and then you can do that. But I think if you kind of put the cart before the horse and you like only focus on networking and you're not like kind of like doing like actually just doing work that people are finding value in your kind of professional life, then I think it's harder to make those leaps. That's what I've seen, at least in my experience as somebody who worked in editorial, and was able to make that leap to directing, like, or is sort of still in process of making that leap, but somewhere along that way, I feel that like the key of it is always like, the priority is like doing a really good job at the job that you're being hired to do, and then when those opportunities arise, like making use of those opportunities. And I think that is how I kind of navigate that part, or I have, and it's been, you can't be too forward thinking, I guess, in that, like, if people get a sense of that you're just trying to use this, like that you're not focused on your job and you're really focused on something else, like they get a sense of that, and then like it can be not good professionally. So I think you gotta really, like, you know, get the, what people have said this before, like, oh, you have to get, like, if you want to, you know, move ahead in Hollywood and entertainment, it's like you gotta, if you're starting from the like assistant level, it's like you gotta get the coffee orders right and all that. Like you have, like whatever your job is, you have to do a good job.
That was the new episode from the team over at the Halal Gap. We hope that you enjoy it. We'll have links to that in the show notes so you can subscribe and listen to it later on in depth. Nadia, that does it for our show. Thanks for joining. Any parting words of wisdom?
You say genuine differently than I do.
Oh, do I?
What did I say? You said genuine. Genuine.
It's like potato and potato,
yeah, you know?
Maybe, yeah, for sure.
No, thank you for having me this week. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for everybody for listening. We'd love to know your thoughts. Again, we're kind of experimenting with new things in our podcast and what to cover. So give us, drop us a line. Email us at info@rafaelion.com. We'll be back next week with another episode of American Muslim Project. I just want to thank my sister Nadia, producer Ari, and until next time, I'm Asad Butt. Thanks. Da 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 da.